All right. Well, here we go. You know what I'm going to say next? Probably. And if you don't, I'll go ahead and say it. And that is, turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It is the famous story of, often just called the spies. And it's chapter 13 of the book of Numbers. So, Bamidbar chapter 13. And of course, the first verse says, "And Yehoah spoke unto Moshe," and here's what he said. So here are the words that should be in red. And it goes like this. Shalach lecha. Send out. Shalach, right? That's the word send out. Send out men that they may spy out. And that word in Hebrew is an interesting one. It's easy to remember. Tour, the verb. Spy out the land of Canaan, which I give unto the children of Israel. Of every tribe of their fathers, you'll send a man, every one of them, a prince among them. And of course, the thing here, this is kind of like Hebrew 101, how to remember certain words. If you remember spies and you think what they're going to go do is tour the land, spy out the land, they're tourists. So there you go. Yeah, it's kind of corny, but I can't help but think there probably actually is some linguistic relation there. In any case, Moshe did. He sent them from the wilderness of Paran, according to the commandment of Yahuwah, all of them men who were heads of the B'nai Israel, the children of Israel. And now we're going to get the names of these 12 men. Now notice, these are not necessarily the same names as the leaders of the tribe, but these are prominent men in the tribe. And here they go. Tribe of Reuben, Shammua, son of Zachur. Of Simeon, Shaphat, son of Hori. Now, Shaphat, remember, is a word that is very similar to judge or judged. And that's what's going to happen in his case. Of the tribe of Judah, Caleb. And that word, of course, means dog, son of Jephunneh. Of the tribe of Issachar, Igal, son of Yosef. Of the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, the son of Nun. We know him. He's going to get renamed here by Moshe very shortly. Of the tribe of Benjamin, Palti, son of Raphu. Palti, my deliverance or escape. Of the son of the tribe of Zebulun, you got Gadiel and my fortune, Gad, right? A troop or fortune. Remember the name of the tribe. And El is my fortune. Is that meaning? Son of Sodi, of the tribe of Joseph, namely the tribe of Manasseh. We now have Gadi, son of Susi. Now notice, we have both of the sons of Ephraim represented here, Manasseh and Ephraim, and the reason is because we're not going to see Levi. Levi doesn't go because Levi does not go to war, and this is kind of a warlike activity. Of the tribe of Dan, Amiel, son of Gamali, people of El, family of El. Of the tribe of Asher, Setur, son of Michael or Michael. Of the tribe of Naphtali, Nabi, son of Vophsi. Of the tribe of Gad, Geuel, the majesty of El, son of Machi. These, it says, are the names of the 12 men that Moshe sent to spy out the land. And it says, Moshe called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Yohushua. So basically, he added a yod to the front of his name. Now, there is a midrashic comment here, and I actually think it makes some sense. Two things occur now. Hoshea, and we're from here out going to see him called Joshua or Yehoshua. He is, of course, the namesake of the Mashiach. That's very important. And also, the midrash suggests that what Moshe wanted to do was make sure Hoshea took the first word of the name of Yah, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, put it up front, so that he would remember that Yah is supposed to be first via his new name. So while that's midrashic and we can't prove it and it doesn't necessarily follow from Scripture, I do think it's an interesting claim. And certainly it's important that he does get renamed, and that's what we see him called from here on out. Moshe then sent them to Tur to spy out the land of Canaan. He said unto them, "Get you on up there into the south. Go up into the mountains." So go up. And the midrashic claim here is kind of interesting as well. If you spy out the land from on high, in other words, if you tend to stick to the high grounds and look down on things, you not only get more or less an aerial view, but also the people that they're going to find don't look nearly as fearsome when they're way up high. See the land. See what it is. People that dwell therein, whether they're strong or weak, whether they're few or many, and what the land is that they dwell in, whether it's good or bad, what cities there are, and what they dwell in, and whether they're in camps or in strongholds. Now, Rashi has an interesting observation here, too. He notes that if you understand the truth that is sometimes counterintuitive, walled cities imply that the people are weak, because they need the walls to help them feel more secure. So it's the opposite of appearances. And this idea of the opposite of appearances is one of the things that's going to make an important element of the story. So see what the land is, whether it's fat or lean, whether there's wood therein or not. And he says, Kazakh, y'all. So it's the y'all form of Kazakh, Chatzak Tem. Be of good courage and bring the fruit of the land. Now the time, it says, was ripe for the time of the first grapes. So we're talking mid to late summer. About, you know, ninth of Av's time, almost, coming up on it. So they went up, and they did. They toured. They spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin unto Rehob, the entrance to Hamath. And they went up from the south, came into Hebron. Ahiman, Sheshai, Talmai, the children of Anak were there. Remember the Anakim, that's the plural of the children of Anak. They were big dudes, probably descendants of the Nephilim. Now it says Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. And that's an interesting comment. It's kind of thrown in there. I have always kind of wondered, and honestly I don't have an understanding of why that is, but it gives us at least a time frame as well. Then it came into the valley of Eshcol, the valley of Cluster. Okay, we're going to see that that's the appropriate name. They cut down from there a cluster of grapes from one branch, and they bore on a pole. It took two men to carry this thing. They also took pomegranates and of the figs. So they brought some fruit home. The Midrash says these were great, big, impressive fruit, by the way. And the place was called, therefore, the Valley of Eshcol, because that's what it was. They had a big cluster there, which the children of Israel cut down. Then they returned from their touring or spying out the land at the end of 40 days. And they went and they came to Moshe and to Aaron and to all of the congregation of the B'nai Israel unto the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh. They brought back word and all the congregation. They showed them all the fruit of the land. Now, this is an interesting statement. I hadn't thought about this much, but the Midrash makes a big deal about it. You would have thought that maybe what they would do, being spies, is that they would go and deliver their report to their superior officers first, right? To Moshe and to Aaron. But that's not what happened. Because what they did is they went, in fact, to all the people, and thus there was a problem. They told him, and they said, we came into the land and where you sent us, and surely it does. It flows with milk and honey, and this is the fruit of it. However, there's always a but, right? However, the people that dwell there are fierce. The cities are fortified. Notice what Rashi said? That means the people aren't as strong as you think. And they're very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. These are big dudes, right? Amalek dwells in the land of the south, and the Hittite, and the Jebusite, and the Amorite. They dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanite dwells by the sea, along by the side of the Jordan. So Caleb, meanwhile, he stilled the people towards Moshe, and he said, look, we should go up at once. Go now and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it. So here's one of the 12 that is saying, listen, we can do this. The men that went up with him said, no, we can't. We're not able to go up against people because they are stronger than we. So the question, of course, up front is, who are they believing? Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh has told them they can do this, and doesn't sound like they're particularly inclined to believe him. So they spread, it says, an evil report of the land. A defamation is another way to translate the Hebrew word there, which is debat, which they had spied out to the B'nai Israel. And they said, this land, which we've passed to spy it out, it's a land that eats up its inhabitants. And all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. These were scary dudes, in other words. We saw there the Nephilim, sons of Anak, who come out of the Nephilim, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers. Now, this is kind of telling as well, right? We saw ourselves as grasshoppers. Yep. Surprise! That's how they saw us too, because that's how we saw ourselves. So, that's how we were in their sight, they said. Now, after the nasty report and essentially the confidence-breaking feedback, all of the congregation, Kol Ha'edot, lifted up their voice and they cried. And the people wept that night. So a couple of observations here. As you know, I will often point to this and say what we're going to see here is the first recorded vote in history. And looks like Joshua and Caleb lost this one 10-2. We'll see the details here in a second. But the other thing is, notice how multiple times as I read through this, we see that it is said explicitly, all of the congregation, everybody, every man at his tent. In other words, there was nobody that was actually on the right side except for Joshua and Caleb. Okay, so the whole congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and all, it says, of the men of Israel murmured against Moshe and against Aaron, and the whole congregation, see, they keep, he keeps repeating this for us, it's all of them, said unto them, oh, we sure wish we had died there in the land of Egypt, or we maybe had died in the wilderness, as long as we're just dead, right? That's the okay thing. Because, oh, why is it that Yahuwah has brought us into this land to fall by the sword? He's brought you through miracles. He's delivered you from bondage. He has shown you miracles the likes of which no one in human history has seen before. You don't think he can protect you from some big dudes? I mean, really. Our wives and our little ones will be a prey. Oh, sure, it would have been better for us to return to Egypt. So, let's make ourselves a head, a captain, and return. Shuv. Back to Egypt. This is the wrong kind of teshuva, folks. This is return to bondage. So, Moshe and Aaron fell on their faces before all of the assembly of the congregation of the B'nai Israel. And it says, Joshua, Yehoshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who were of them that spied out the land, they rent their clothes. And they spoke unto all the congregation of the B'nai Israel, and they said, look, this land, which we passed through to spy it out, is an exceedingly good land. If Yahuwah delights in us, then he will bring us into the land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. That was the only part of the report that they all got right. Just don't rebel against Yahuwah, nor fear the people of the land, because they are bread, they're meat for us. In other words, we're going to eat them alive. Their defense is removed from over them, and it's Yahuwah who's with us. Fear them not. But, here we go, Kol Ha'edah, all of the congregation attempted to stone them with stones when the glory of Yahuwah appeared in the tent of meeting unto all of the B'nai Israel. And Yahuwah said to Moshe, how long are this people going to, listen to this choice of word, despise me? How long will they not believe me for all the signs and the miracles which I've wrought among them? I'll smite them with pestilence and destroy them, and I'll make of you, he's talking to Moshe, remember, a nation greater and mightier than they. Now, Moshe is going to try to talk him out of it again. He says to Yahuwah, when the Egyptians hear, because you brought this people up and your might from among them, remember, they will say to the inhabitants of this land who've heard that you, Yahuwah, are in the midst of this people, insomuch as you, Yahuwah, are seen face to face and your cloud stands over them and you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. In other words, it's a pretty bold statement here. They're going to see all that. Now, if you kill all this people as one man, then the nations who have heard of your fame, the fame of you, will speak. And here's what they'll say. Because Yahuwah wasn't able to do it. He wasn't able to bring this people into the land that he swore unto them. Therefore, that's why he killed them out there in the wilderness. And now I pray you, let the power of Yahuwah be great, according to as you have spoken. And here we see another indication, of course, of how it is that Moshe prayed, and it's a pretty good example for us. What he's going to do is remind him of these attributes that we saw when he passed before him and Moshe was hidden in the cleft of the rock, if you recall. And it's almost a quote, and this, of course, is a good thing. Remind him of his promises, remind him of his statements about himself. Yahuwah is slow to anger and plenteous in loving kindness, forgiving torahlessness and transgression, and that he will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity, the torahlessness of the fathers upon the children, upon the third and upon the fourth generation even. Pardon, I pray you, the iniquity, the torahlessness of this people, according to the greatness of your loving kindness, and according as you have forgiven this people from Egypt even up until now. And Yahuwah's response is interesting. He doesn't just say, you know, in an unlimited statement, all right, they're forgiven. He says, I have pardoned according to your word, which is fascinating. And, of course, there are those that say, well, this is partially, this is a partial forgiveness. It's mercy tempered with judgment, because we're going to see some judgment here. But in very deed, as I live, he says, and all the earth shall be filled with the glory of Yahuwah, surely all of those men that have seen my glory, they've seen my signs, which I wrought in Egypt and in the wilderness, yet still, he says, they have put me to the test these 10 times and have not hearkened, shamarred to my voice. Okay? They've seen it. And ultimately what he's saying, and we'll see this in some words that Yahushua uses, sometimes people are simply without excuse. and without excuse here. Surely they shall not see the land that I swore unto their fathers, nor shall any of them that despised me see it. So, let me remind the way I tend to see the situation again. We have this, it's not explicitly a vote, of course, but clearly it is. It's a majority 10 to 2 that says don't go, brings home the bad report. Joshua and Caleb aren't buying it, but the entire congregation of Israel did buy it. They signed up for it. They whined at their tents, and they all unanimously suffered for it. Any of them that despise me, none of them will see it. But my servant Caleb, because he had another spirit, another ruach within him, he's followed me fully. Him will I bring into the land wherewith he went, and his seed shall possess it. Now, the Amalekite and the Canaanite dwell in the vale. Tomorrow turn, get you into the wilderness by way of the Red Sea, or the Sea of Reeds. Yahuwah spoke to Moshe and unto Aaron, and he said the following, how long am I going to put up with this? Bear with this evil congregation that keeps whining and murmuring against me. I've heard the murmurings of the children of Israel, which they keep murmuring against me, and so say to them, as I live, says Yahuwah, surely, as you have spoken in my ears, you know what? You're asking for it. You got it. Right, Toyota? I will do to you. Your carcasses will fall in this wilderness, and everyone, all that were numbered of you, according to your whole number, remember, 603,550 men able to go to war, from 20 years old and upward, that have murmured against me, surely you shall not come into the land concerning which I lifted up my hand, that I would make you dwell there, or let you dwell there, except for those two, save Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, the son of Nun. But your little ones, the ones that you said would be a prey, nope, them will I bring into the land, and they shall know the land that you rejected. Now, as for you, though, your carcasses will fall in this wilderness. Now, your children, they'll be wanderers in the wilderness for 40 years, and they'll bear your strings until your carcasses are consumed, Bamidbar, in the wilderness. After the number of days in which you spied out the land, 40 days, well, for every day, a year. You shall bear your toilessness, your iniquities, 40 years, and you shall know my displeasure. So, this is where, basically, the die is cast. The quick trip becomes a 40-year sojourn, Bamidbar, in the wilderness. For I, Yahuwah, have spoken, surely this will I do unto all of this evil congregation, that are gathered against me together. In this wilderness they shall be consumed, and there they shall die. And the men whom Moses sent to Tur to spy out the land, remember those 10, whom, when they returned, made all the congregation to murmur against him by bringing up their slander, their defamation, their evil report against the land, those men that brought up the evil report died by a plague before Yahuwah. So it doesn't sound like they lived out the next day. We don't know for sure how long it took, but basically they were plagued and they were gone. Joshua, son of Nun, though, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, remained alive of those men that went to spy out the land. So I guess one of the morals of the story here is the first recorded vote. Everybody that participated is going to die in the wilderness, and those that won the vote, ha-ha, didn't really win after all. Moshe told these words to the B'nai Israel, and they mourned greatly. Oh yeah, now, right? Now they're going to get it. So they got up early in the morning, and they got themselves to the top of the mountain, and they said, lo, here we are. We're going to go up into the place which Yahuwah has promised, because we have sinned. And Moshe is going to calm them down a little bit, but not enough, evidently. He says, look, why do you now transgress the commandment of Yahuwah, seeing that it isn't going to work? It's not going to prosper. You've made your bed, now you're going to lie in it. Do not go up, because Yahuwah is not among you, that you may not be smitten down before your enemies. You had a chance. He would have gone with you, but no. Now you're going to go alone if you try to go, so don't. For there the Amalekite and the Canaanite are before you, and you shall fall by the sword. For as much as you've turned back from following Yahuwah, he will not be with you. So, they went ahead anyway, right? They presumed to go up to the top of the mountain. Nevertheless, the Ark of the Covenant of Yahuwah and Moshe did not depart with them. Surprise. Then come the Amalekite and the Canaanite who dwelt in the hill country. They came down, and they smote them, and they beat them down even unto Hormah. All right, the next chapter then says, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and here's what he said. Speak unto the B'nai Israel and say to them, when you come into the land of your habitations, which I give unto you. Now, let's wait a second. This is interesting. They just got essentially a death sentence. Everybody who did not, well, except for Joshua and Caleb, all of the men, the adults, their carcasses are going to fall in the wilderness. 40 years. They got a 40-year sentence. But he says, eventually, 40 years hence, when you come into the land, which I give to you, you'll make an offering by fire unto Yahuwah. A burnt offering or a zebak, a sacrifice, in fulfillment of a vow, clearly uttered, or as a freewill offering, or in your appointed seasons, to make a sweet savor unto Yahuwah, whether it's of the herd or of the flock. Then he that does this will bring his offering present unto Yahuwah. All right, here we go. A meal offering of a tenth part of an ephah of fine flour mingled with a fourth part of a hin of oil. So it's a prescription for how it's going to be done. Wine for the drink offering, a fourth part of a hin. You prepare with the burnt offering or for the sacrifice for each lamb. Now, if it's a ram, prepare for a meal offering, two-tenths part of an ephah of fine flour mingled with a third part of a hin of oil. So it's a little bit bigger. And for the drink offering, you present a third part of a hin of wine, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. And we prepare a bullock for a burnt offering or a sacrifice in fulfillment of a vow clearly uttered, or a shalamim, peace offerings to Yahuwah. Then this shall be presented with the bull offering, a bullock, a meat offering of 3/10 part of an ephah of fine flour. Okay, 3/10 part of an ephah of fine flour, mingled with half a hin of oil, and present for the drink offering half a hin of wine for an offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. So a little bit more in this case too. Thus it shall be done for each bull or for each ram and for each of the he lambs or the kids. According to the number that you may prepare, so you shall do for everyone according to their number. And here's where I think it gets more interesting, because we're going to see something repeated here. It's not the only time in Scripture, but it's certainly very explicit. All that are homeborn shall do these things in this way, in presenting an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto to Yahuwah. However, if there is a stranger who sojourns among you, or whosoever may be among you throughout your generations, and he'd like to do this, to make an offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto Yahuwah, same as you do, well, he shall do the following. For the congregation, now, here we go. There is one statute, hucha echad, for you, both you, and for the stranger that sojourns among you. This is a statute forever throughout your generations. As you are, so shall the stranger be before Yahuwah. So basically, this is, you've heard it before, one law for you and the stranger that dwells among you. And that is essentially where we're headed here. Let's see. Briefly, there's a question, I guess. Were the people who were fighting aged but disabled required to fight? Doesn't say. It's an argument from science or silence. So I guess technically I can't answer it. But I'd be surprised that if it's not one of two things, that's the answer. Again, this is pure markology, because there is nothing said about them. And we know that the only time it's mentioned that I can think of is when it has to do with the people who are making offerings, some of the Kohanim and so forth. If they're disfigured, they don't do that. But I have a tough time believing that they would have the disabled fight. I mean, not going to be that much good. But I'm also not even sure that there would be that many, if any, that were disabled. Because essentially what happened here is that they, their stuff didn't get old. It didn't wear out. And I suspect they probably didn't have much of an issue on that score. But again, that's just my own take, because Scripture doesn't say. All right, so back where we were, one Torah, one law, and one ordinance will be for both you and the stranger that sojourns with you. And then Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, "Speak unto the children of Israel, say to them, when you come into the land," there it is again, which I'm bringing you, years from now, "then it shall be that when you eat the bread of the land, you shall set apart a portion for a gift unto Yahuwah. Of the first of your dough, you shall set apart a cake as a gift. That which is set apart of the threshing floor, you set it apart. Of the first of your dough, you give to Yahuwah a portion for a gift throughout your generations. And when you err," in other words, you make a mistake, "and do not observe all of these commandments which Yahuwah has spoken unto Moshe, even all that Yahuwah has commanded you by the hand of Moshe, from the day that Yahuwah gave commandment and onward throughout your generations, then it shall be." Okay, so when there's a problem, when there's a mistake, if it's done in error by the congregation, now notice, we have seen this before, special dispensation, if you will, for errors that are done, then things like this that are hidden from the congregation's eyes All of the congregation shall offer one young bull for a burnt offering with a sweet savor unto Yahuwah, and a meal offering that goes with it, and the drink offering, along with the, according to the ordinance, and one he-goat for a chatat, a sin offering. So a bull and a goat. And the Kohen shall make atonement for Kol Ha'edat, all the congregation of the Bnei Israel. And they'll be forgiven, because it was an error. And they brought their offering, an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah, and their chatat, their sin offering before Yahuwah, for their error. And all of the congregation of the children of Israel shall be forgiven. Same, the stranger that sojourns among them, for in respect of all the people, it was done in error. And if one person sins through error, well, then that one shall offer a she-goat of the first year for a chatat. Priest shall make atonement for the soul that errs when he sins through error before Yahuwah to make atonement for him, and he shall be forgiven. So this is a kind of a repetition of something we've understood before. Sin in error, okay, there's a process. And this applies to, here it is again, both you, he that's homeborn, in other words, among the children of Israel, and of the stranger, Hager, the ger that sojourns among them. You shall have one Torah for him that does something in error, one instruction for all of them. You ready? We can see what's coming next, right? But the soul that does something with a high hand, in other words, he knows better, whether he's homeborn or a stranger, that same has blasphemed Yahuwah. That soul shall be cut off from among his people. And here it is again. You notice this is the same thing that he said about those men that died by plague. They won the vote and they died. Because he has despised the word of Yahuwah and has broken his commandment. That soul shall be utterly cut off. His iniquity, his Torahlessness, his blood is on him. And while the children of Israel were in the wilderness, now notice, we now have the situation, we're going to get immediately an example. One of those cases where somebody should have known better. So, while the children of Israel were still in the wilderness, they found a man gathering sticks upon the Sabbath day. Forbidden. They found him gathering sticks, and those that got him brought him to Moshe and Aaron and unto all the congregation. And they locked him up so they could figure out what they needed to do with him, because it hadn't yet been declared what that would be. So Yahuwah said unto Moshe, this man shall surely be put to death. Kol Ha'edat, all the congregation shall stone him with stones outside the camp. So they did. All the congregation brought him outside the camp. They stoned him with stones, and he died, as Yahuwah commanded Moshe. And then Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, now, what do we have? We have an example. Do not do something that you know is wrong with a heavy hand. If you do, there's punishment for it. It's not a sin committed in error. This guy knew what was happening. He did so deliberately. And Moshe hears again the follow-up. Speak unto the children of Israel. Tell them that they should make for themselves throughout their generations fringes in the corners of their garment. We're going to see a word here that's used. That word is tekelet. So they make fringes, and that they put with the fringe of each corner a thread of blue, tekelet. So the requirement, these, by the way, these are called tzitzit, and we're going to see the word appear in Scripture. And it's these cords, strands of woven strings, essentially, that are attached to the four corners of the garment. And the thread of blue is tekelet. It shall be for you a fringe so that you can look upon it, so that you can remember all of the commandments of Yahuwah and do them. So it's an interesting reminder. He says, here's how it's going to work. You wear these things on your garment and they will be a constant reminder to you to walk in obedience. So that you do not go about spying, in other words, tour, do not go about after your own heart, is literally the words that are used here, and after your own eyes, which you use, in other words, they lead you astray, so that you remember and do all of my commandments, and be set apart unto your El. And here we get the signature line, right? Ani Yahuwah Elohechem, I am Yahuwah your El, who brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your El, Ani Yahuwah Elohechem. And with that, and that signature line, the Torah portion and the chapter 15 end. So an interesting set of situations described here. And I can't help but notice one other thing, too. I've often remarked that it's interesting to me how often the Torah portion lines up with things that are going on in the world. And what we see this week is a whole lot of information having to do with war and spying out things. And it looks like, as a matter of fact, more than a few indications that the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence, maybe the President, are getting crappy information from their own security spies and the CIA and others, almost like they're jonesing for a war and pushing and lying in order to get it. So I can't help but think when it comes to certain kinds of things and bearing false witness before Yahuwah and not listening to him, there are, I guess you could say, there's nothing new under the sun.